Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Banda Banda is a celebrated South African musician, producer, and creative entrepreneur with a rich career spanning multiple facets of the music industry. Banda Banda has collaborated with some of South Africa's most iconic musicians over the years, including Simbongile Kumalo, Huma Sakela, Busi Mhlongo, Madala Kunene, and Tandiswe Mazwai. In 2015, Banda Banda founded Banda Banda and the Crocodiles, a project aimed at collaborating with versatile musicians from around the globe. The group blends African music with funk, Latin, and jazz influences. The band released its debut album in March 2020 to critical acclaim. In 2019, Banda Banda established the Banda Banda Agency to formalize his contributions to the music industry. The agency was inspired by his years of informal assistance to artists and stakeholders in areas such as artist management, music production, and event organization. In addition to his work as a musician and producer, Banda Banda serves as the content producer for Ukhozi FM's Jazz 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 Show. He has been a producer, composer, and business manager for Zoe Modiga for many years. He helped produce Zoe's albums Nkanekwane and Nomthandazo, which have placed her as one of the most respectable artists of this generation. He has also produced and worked closely with Joel Zuma, Dumza Mazwana, Zodwa Mabena, and Mbuso Khoza. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Soligol Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, discussing his journey in the entertainment world and his latest album, Zinza, is Banda Banda. We have got Banda Banda.
Yeah. Listen to you. Hi, I'm Banda Banda. I'm very excited to be here.
Yes. So for the listener, we met through a mutual person.
Yeah.
Zoe Modiga. I went to do a quick interview with her at Joburg Theatre, and then you turned out for some reason. Well, not some reason. I needed your assistance as my cameraman, which you gratefully assisted me with that. So we appreciate that. But now you're here today in the hot seat. Why the name Banda Banda? How did you choose that?
So that's my family name.
Okay.
Yeah. So we are Bandas. I'm born South African, yes, in Durban, in KZN. Banda people are Malawian. So my family name is Banda, and everyone used to call me Banda. And everyone calls me Banda. So it's like Banda, Banda.
Okay.
So it's like I'm the bull of the family.
So you have multiple iterations in the creative world. Let's rewind to the very beginning. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be on this path. And how did that journey progress?
So for me, the music started very early. It's not too early, actually, because I was like 14, 15. I think I was in high school. It's a typical story of going to church and finding that it's taking you out of the streets and you're working with people that are really passionate about the same thing. So there was a sense of belonging because I used to play soccer. And then the next thing was music. And I'm very good at soccer anyways. Like I was very, 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 most people don't even know that. But when I found music, it was more safer for me, expression-wise, because not everyone can do it. Unfortunately for me, I could adapt very quickly to it. I don't come from a family of musicians at all. So when I was 15, I was doing grade, it was standard at the time, it's like 98. I think I was doing standard 7, 8, mm-hmm. somewhere there.
I know the standards.
Yeah. So it was grade 9, mm-hmm. 10, somewhere there. Yeah, so I started by playing like some guitars in church. I could play some 3 chords on that C strumming and all that. And unfortunately for me, you know, guitars in the black community is not as prominent when it comes to how they express the music, unless it's not a very prominent, especially in the gospel world.
Okay.
Have you not noticed that?
I hadn't realized it until you mentioned it now.
I'm actually also realizing that because if you play that kind of music in that Western kind of religious environment, then it becomes like it's a strange sound. but keyboards are more acceptable in that space. So I started playing keyboards. Not playing. There was a guy called Kumbuzo who used to play keyboards in church. And I used to watch him, you know, just look at him. Oh, he's pressing, pressing. So I know the days never arrived for rehearsals.
So just from watching him, you knew, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So I started just trying it out. That's how I started learning.
Okay, so what were the next steps from that to now say, okay, I want to be professional in this place?
I've never known to be a professional. I've never known that there was this part when I said I wanted to be professional. Okay. So I think on a year before my matric, which was grade 11, there was a guy who came to my neighborhood in church, and he was playing so professionally, guys, very professional. And he was playing all the popular songs, like how they were sound on radio. Oh, I thought this was computers in my head, because I come from a place where it was a very undeveloped society. It's not middle class, it's below, way below, like poor. So exposure to things was not a thing. I didn't know what was what. So for me, think of someone that's coming and they're playing things that are more polished. I thought it was like a computer playing. Like, how do you do this?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you must remember at that time, the computers were also like really big. Windows 98. Yeah. That whole thing was a big thing. So I was like, there's no way this guy is playing. So I went to ask him. His name is Vincent Mtetwa. How do you get to play like that? You know, and he told me that he studies music. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that you could study music. So it was like a big light bulb on my face, like, ooh, okay, can study music. Then I asked him when, and he told me, I wrote it down when I got home. That's when I realized this is what I wanted to do. So when everyone was asking me, you know, that when you're doing grade 11, standard 9, everyone is asking me, what are you going to do? I said, I want to be a musician. So that's how it started. And then I think my grandmother in that year when I was doing my matric asked me what I want to do. And I said I wanted to be a musician. And the only question she asked me, very, very important questions for a parent, very important, is it going to make you happy?
Like that.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So my starting point on music was about my sense of belonging and going to get a validation from my grandparents. To ask me if whatever I'm going to do is going to make me happy. So it was never professional, just to answer your question.
Okay.
It was about happiness.
Yes, passionate. Yes.
Fulfillment, not passion.
Okay.
It's a different thing.
Okay.
Fulfillment, not passion. Is it going to fulfill you?
Okay, got it.
Because passion sounds like it's something that you just want to do. Fulfillment is something that will make you feel like complete. Yeah, happy.
Different dictionary of definitions. Interesting. Now, you have different iterations within the industry. So let's unpack them. Let's put on the producer hat.
Okay.
At what point did you feel that, okay, this is a hat I want to wear? And tell us about that journey.
So I never wanted to be a producer.
Okay.
Most of the things I'm doing now, I never wanted to do. That's the thing about it. So I've always been passionate about people and connecting things, ideas, people, you know. Now that I'm older, I understand that I've always been a connector. So I think I went to study music, and we'll go back to that.
Yeah.
And then at some point I was doing, I don't know if you know Barnett Theatres.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was doing Barnett Theatres and, I did 2 years.
So you mean you were performing as part of
the band
at the production?
At some point, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll go back and forth. So just you understand, because you asked me about producer. And there was a gentleman there by the name of Joe Zuma. Amazing singer, amazing songwriter. We're in the same cast. Because already by that time I was at work with all the prominent artists like Musim Hlongo, Mandalang Nene, Sibongile Khumalo. I was already prominent in the music space, though. I think the only thing that made me go to that space, because I couldn't travel, there was problems with my passports. So I was like, my friends are traveling all over the world. I'm frustrated whenever they book me for gigs and they say, can you travel? I'm like, I can't. So it became like a thing. So I was like, okay, let me fix my papers with the department. And then, so I went into Banya for 2 years. Amazing experience. So I met this gentleman, Joel Zuma. And I said, hey, man, I know some guys in the industry. I think you should record your own record, you know, being a connector at the time, but without knowing. And we went through some few friends because they were already producing and I was not confident being this producer person. And we went through and I felt like what the songwriter was doing versus what they were doing was two different worlds. I felt like they were doing themselves more than doing the work of the artist.
Okay.
You get me? Like, mm-hmm. So I then asked the guy, hey man, I can do this. You know, I can help you because I know the vision. I can help you do this production thing. So that's how it became like, the love of producing. And then I produced his first album. And at some point I was the same guy who was walking into Universal EMI at the time saying, I've got this record. I've just produced it. You need it. So I became like a manager, A&R. I was the whole thing in one that record and that record went. So when we got a deal, I got him a deal and EMI without knowing anyone. So I walked in, like going to Sensen. I remember there by, what's that road?
Catherine.
Yes, Catherine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went there. I knocked. I met a gentleman by the name of, there was a gentleman with glasses there. I forgot his name. I think he's late now. And it's like, I will call you back, like taking demos and the album was good enough. They called us back, got a deal. So that's how it started with the production thing. First album.
Were there any parts of the producer hat that surprised you that were part of it that you didn't realize would be part of it?
Because I had worked with so many artists and I understood, like, because I'd listened, by that time, I think I'd listened to a lot of records and all of that. For me, the producer, I didn't know I could do it, but I knew what the producer is supposed to do. Is to anchor the artist and give them direction on their idea, not my idea, and just make sure you capture as best possible what they want to record. One of the things that I was learning as I was going is that there's a lot of depth of you as a musician because it's a different head. So this is why there's very few prominent producers in the world, not even in South Africa. Because most producers produce songs and then artists hop on those songs. I made an example when we went to the listening session. I said, I'm more of a Quincy than a Babyface.
Yes. Yeah.
Remember that distinction?
Yeah.
Okay. Babyface is a songwriter producer who produces a sound and then you'll hop onto their sound.
Yes.
And you sing it in your own way. But a Quincy is more like someone who sees the whole picture and tries and do the best picture as possible. Look at Tamia and then look at Michael Jackson. Mm. Just those two already. You can see it's like two different worlds, but there is a thing about the quality of what it does. So I had to learn that as a producer, there's different kinds of producers. I didn't know these things when I was going in. And with now, as I'm growing older as a producer, and I don't produce a lot. I don't lie. I'm very picky, but I'm learning that maybe that's one of the, special things that I'm learning about being a producer, that not everyone can produce in a way that they don't insert themselves.
So it sounds like very much like the differentiation between, I don't know what, maybe if this is the correct word, differentiation between ego.
Yes.
And letting go of the ego. So when ego comes into play, the artist asks for guidance and then ego says, this is what we're doing. Whereas when ego's not there, the artist asks for guidance and person says, well, what is your vision? What is your path? Let's focus on that and then grow from there.
I believe that ego has to be there. It's knowing how to manage the ego.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think...
Well, yeah, I think there's ego all the time.
Yeah, there should be ego.
Yeah.
If there's no ego, there's no pride on what you're doing. I always think about it in a way that there should be mutual respect. But one person must make the last decision.
And is that the artist or the producer in your world?
In my world, both. Because I wear different hats when I produce. Because there's a producer hat and then there's an A&R, which is artist and repertoire, which is now talking to how the consumer is supposed to live with the music. Because that one will make the bigger decision. So at some point, because I'm also doing A&R when I produce. And fortunately, musically, I'm not... I understand music very well. So that's another thing about being a kind of producer, because I understand music from the theory side. I went to study music, so I understand the theory. I understand all the chords. I see the whole thing. But when it comes to A&R now, you have to understand human consumption, on how psychology of humans, on how then you make sure it sticks with them. So that's when I can say that maybe the artist doesn't have, most artists don't have that kind of knowledge, or not even knowledge, it's intuition around that. That's my sales side, you know. So I'm like, yeah, I hear you, but by the time we get to this part, the person is skipping because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So when it comes to producing, we both have to wrestle that conversation. Mm. But the A&R side is the one where the artist now really has to listen. Normally in a record label, you go to make A&R at the record label.
Yeah.
People who are not in the studio, they say, we don't like this. We must remove this. I think we need a feature here. I think this part is the one messing up the song. They don't care. And it sounds insensitive, but I also do that when it comes to artists. And most times artists don't have a say. And then the record label will tell you that, the exec will tell you that we are putting the money on this. So we know what sells.
How do you know what sells? And in what genres? Or is it the formula for all genres?
No, there's no, I don't think there's formulas for me.
Okay. Is it a feeling?
Yeah. I think I work more on intuition. I crave more for the repeat value, where you feel like something just happened, or there's a space that I don't know what is happening. And then you want to, let me listen again. It's like a conversation. And it sounds like, I've listened to this conversation. I want to go and listen again. Maybe there's something I missed. That magic. That's the magic. There's no formulas for me. I don't work on formulas, because it's a world of unknown, where your knowledge is the guiding point for the unknown. It's not the main thing.
Okay.
That's how I work from that premise. Because the minute I think I know that I'm doing something in a formula, that means I've lost the plot.
Because music is energy and there's no formula to
it. Yeah, so the energy, that's the one that was going to always guide.
But it's interesting, back before social media, before the digitals, there was this thing of the gatekeepers of the record label, like, okay, we don't think you'll sell in Singapore. We don't think you'll sell there. Also, with the radio stations and that. And this is still happening. I just read an article last year, the year before, where there's a certain amount of UK radio stations, BBC One and a couple, who will not play any female artists over the age of 30 because they perceive them to be no longer relevant. But now with social media, it's allowing them to sort of get past that barrier. For example, a brilliant example is Kylie Minogue with Padam Padam. Mm. They weren't playing it. They were like, oh, we're not interested because she's now 55. It's not relevant to the audience. But then it blew up on social media because it blew up on social media, they were now forced. So there are sort of still these gatekeepers and these societal perceptions of certain labels that are intrinsic in the world and in the music industry. What are your thoughts around this?
It's a very layered question. I don't know if you know this. I work on radio. I work in the biggest radio in Africa, on Okozi FM. That's why I produce one of the shows. I'm proud. The biggest show in Africa I produce. I believe that within radio's got systems, and a listener of a radio, a consumer of a radio station, is someone that is very specific. And they're waiting for very specific things. As someone who's been outside more than I've been inside radio, there's a lot of things that still need to change. But I don't think they can change overnight. Like, for instance, in our show that we do, there's a lot of music that wasn't there. Because first of all, maybe the people that are part of that community of music, they're not really invested in the kind of music. I'll talk about labels. There was a time when hip-hop was banging and all record label execs were hip-hop guys. And then there was a time where record labels were banging when the Tandiswas were coming out in 2004 in South Africa, when the Sipos Toilets, people who were passionate about identity, African music and all of that, were part of the execs of those Sonys and the Linda Ronan Keezes, of those big corporations. So it all depends on who's leading the man. You know, it's not a, I wouldn't call it a gatekeep. It's time. It's a time thing where you find that now there's youth that are pushing on a piano, because maybe someone was youthful from the township, then gets into the advertising world. So it's a whole ecosystem. I don't think there's anyone who's gatekeeping anything, but there are gatekeepers. I don't know how to express it without feeling like there's someone who's holding a gate. I feel like people are protecting their interests on the things they know.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember going to Sony and all these labels, Universal, 2016, and telling them about the artists that are popping right now. There's always the Mananas, the Langas, and saying this is the future of South African music, and no one was listening. But now it's proven, because now they are prominent. And now getting them on labels is more difficult than it was then, because now the ask or what they would require is more than a developer, because they're developer artists, right?
Okay. Understood.
It just depends on who's leading the line. Do you have visionaries, people that are seeing beyond what they think they know? The idea of talking to people is to understand that there's many levels of changing the world. There's someone who needs to make the first call to say, I think we are done with this era. We need to move to the next era. And that person must have courage.
Okay. Your music, your creation, how do you create a song?
So I play bass. So as you know, for many years, the 60s, 70s, 80s music mainly. 90s at some point, yeah, bass was very prominent. So bass is a very like prominent part of the song. If there's two things that people sing is the melody and the lyrics and the bass. Doom, doom, doo, doom, 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 doom. Fortunately for me, I play the best instrument in the world. Yeah, so I write the song. Most songs I write on bass, but my first instrument, as I did say, was guitar, but I wasn't advanced enough to even write on guitar. So I write mostly on bass and piano. And they just come, eh? I don't dream of them. When I'm playing around my bass, I feel like sometimes a good idea comes and I sit on it and something comes out most of the time, you know. I don't have a formula for writing. I don't dream. I've never dreamed of the song, of a song at all. Never. I just play my guitar and somehow things come out and I follow my intuition. Yeah, mostly. I think I write like that.
In your many hats and aspects that you are in the world, fingers in your pies, yeah. When does or do you bunda say, okay, now it's time to write a new album, new music? Or is there just a feeling to know, okay, let's get cracking?
So I think there's a creative bug that attacks you. And somehow you find yourself spending more time in that bug. Because if you don't, you are sick physically and emotionally imbalanced. So you need to express that side of you. So for me, it happens like that. And I listen to myself a lot. I listen to my center. Most times I jot down the ideas and I leave them. I leave the ideas. And then, yeah, when I come back, I'm like, oh, because I listen now as a listener also. Like someone's like, oh, there's something there, you know. So it always happens like that, where maybe a bug got into me and I was playing. Even now I have things that I've not recorded that are sitting somewhere. And I know when I go back to them, I'm like, oh, damn, there's something happening here, you know. And then I take it from there and try and listen to what was happening around that emotion. Cause I think music is more emotion than notes. I mostly record the emotion, you know, more than the notes. And the notes I still need to learn. Like when we went to do my listening session, I was telling people that I still need to learn this music because I also don't know it. Same as you, as you are listening to it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's that kind of thing where you record a moment and then record lyrics, all of that, but you actually don't know what's happening. This is how I exist in music. I don't know what's happening. Now I'm more stressed now to learn that version, even the energy behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not just the performing, like, because you need to be authentic to what that moment is.
Yes.
To be a great artist.
Tell us about the latest album.
2020, I wrote, when people were going down, on, we were all going down on COVID. The first phase, before they knew what it was, they were calling it isolation or something like that. Just before saying total lock, 3 weeks or 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks.
I think isolation.
Isolation of some sort, yeah. I just announced that I was releasing an album in that week. End of February, they were announcing that no one should go anywhere. So the album is out, ready to release, and suddenly can't perform or can't do anything. And COVID happened, and everyone was locked down. Music was my world. I got to sit and be with music. I got to learn a lot of new things about myself, toys, all these gadgets, you know. So I was spending a lot of time with music because I could do nothing else. So I wrote most of the album then. And I froze it since that time. So because I had already recorded, I think Zoe's album, we had already produced the Ingane Bane album, which was due to release in June, the same year when COVID was happening. First album I produced, Ingane Bane, which is one of the happiest albums right now. Yeah, so I just froze because COVID traumatized a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just decided to focus on building the Zoe brand. And I was very specific. I said to her, don't worry about me, I'll be fine. Let's do your thing. So this was Zinza. I didn't know what was Zinza at the time. It was a bunch of ideas. I think I only started going back to it in 2023 late to 2024. Where I'm like, okay, now I'm ready. Let me see what I have. I started recording some drums because I'd recorded all the instruments on the album myself. And even drums and all of that. But I wanted to have a feel of other people, you know. So I called my friends, Iri Bolaji, to come and play some drums. Guitar that recorded, well, there's a guy called Eben Nobela, plays guitar. So he came to my apartment and I plugged him in. I was like, play something. I sing most of the guitars when I record, you know, because remember I said I played guitars, but I'm not as good. So I sing all the lines. I'm like, I don't know, I'll fix it, you know. Producer hits. And then I think last year, 2024, I started thinking about the songs that felt like they are not complete and seeing who the song is asking for. Then I asked for some few features to come in and just bring themselves to the music. Yeah, that's how the whole album came. And now we are sitting here and we are listening to an album with 17 tracks.
And it is an amazing album. I've listened to it at the listening event. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. Not necessarily in South Africa for the overseas listener, because we don't have as much access. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the listening to song from 1 to number 17, the booklet. I'm sure if you're aware that the rest of the world, massive upsurge of a physical again. The year before last in the UK, 5.9 million vinyl sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year, also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And there needs to be a certain amount of exchanges every day for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. And then we have the streaming platforms, as we know. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Well, my business head says true for the first world. We are also picking it up, especially on vinyls. So there's a big market for vinyls. And I'm going to print the albums that are produced on vinyls. CDs, I've printed other albums on CDs. The problem is that the ecosystem of the world is not working with us when it comes to CDs specifically, because people don't have CD players at home. And they're not going to buy them because they're not getting sold at shops. Cars don't have CD players. My business brain says I'm not going to invest on something that people won't buy because I already have a lot of stock at home that people are not getting. Not because they don't like the products, because they don't know where to. It's like another thing, storage. And it takes a lot of, especially CDs, they take a lot of space. They're plastic. There's more, more to it. Pollution and other things. When it breaks, then there's no way to fix that cover. It's a lot of things, you know. CDs I won't do. But vinyls, definitely, because vinyls is paper, and also you can touch it, you can look at it like this, you can post with it. It's more usable. And also, it's been proven that vinyls can last a century, you know. So definitely vinyls. So I would say my predictions is that in South Africa, the biggest business is the vinyl business. And that's why I'm part of it. Printing.
Okay. Oh, are you doing that as well?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. There's so many things you do. You mentioned earlier there were different aspects of the journey that you'd want to come back to. So let's go to those. You studied music. You wanted to go back to those different elements.
After matric, I went to study music. Mm-hmm. Same school as Black Coffee, Duzo Makatini, Mondli Ngcobo, Zakes Mantwini. All the biggest artists were in the same years.
Oh, so you studied with them.
If we're mafia, we'll call ourselves a cartel.
Ted.
Of musicians that have really impacted. Mubeko Mbatha is like a gospel artist. And all of them were all different. When I got there, I got to learn more about myself and also finding, you remember, as I did say at the beginning, that I come from a very disadvantaged background area. Not background as in like home. At home we're fine, but the background was like I'd never seen a musician. Going there really, really changed me because now, like, there's 200 kids or 100 kids that are studying this thing and they're all passionate. First year, second year, third year, you know. It opened my eyes. I got to see people that I used to see on TV coming to class. And, you know, like, it really, really, really changed my life. And I got bursaries when I was there. I was like one of the top students, you know. It was amazing for me. As I got to learn that I'm a fast learner and gifted on this thing, but I dropped out.
Oh, how come?
Because I felt like it was moving me away from me, getting me closer to the space of sounding like everyone else.
Ah, okay, got it.
Yeah. And I remember I asked my lecturer, Demi Fernandez, I think he's retiring this year, to say, I don't want to do this. I can come to classes, and I think it was intuition at the time, but I didn't know what was happening because, like, I can come to classes, but I don't want to be part of the thing.
Yeah.
Because the people I respect, the people that I really love when it comes to music, they never went to school. People study about them. You get me? So yeah. I wanted to be the one who studied about.
Yes.
I didn't want to be the one who studied so that I don't dilute whatever contribution that I was going to bring into the music. So I was like, so I still went to school, but I never really finished my degree. So it really, really allowed me to be as raw as possible. But also it meant that I had limitations because my peers were learning more advanced things at the time when it comes to technicalities, but I was learning more intuitive ways of doing the same thing. So you feel like when we meet now, when you meet the other person is like, we do it like this because this, they can explain it to you. I'm like, no, but it doesn't feel right. And so there was always that push. And even today, some of them, I'm like, yeah, but I lean more on feeling. As you notice, even the conversations around production, I lean more on feeling. The unknown is more the world I live in.
Yeah.
Imagination, a place that I don't know instead of a place that I know, because the place I don't know has more possibilities.
It's interesting you say that because just because you're doing it in a different way doesn't mean that their way is right.
Vice versa. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just different. So yeah. It should be an amalgamation of like, oh, cool. Let's try these various things and be open to that instead of like, oh, no, I'm stuck in this. I'm not saying that any of them are like that, but so many people get stuck in comfort zones.
Yeah. But you must remember, like a lot of us, you know, as humans, we always stand from a place of knowing. That's why I'm speaking more about me as a place of unknowing.
Exactly.
Where I'm a seeker, where you are looking for something, you're seeking something, because that's where you can, that ego dies quicker, where you're killing that ego, where you're like, this ego is great, but it's not allowing me to get into a better version of what I'm supposed to be and who I'm supposed to be. So the unknowing for me is the place where I exist the best.
Which is amazing, but most people so fear the unknown. Like, for example, I teach spinning classes.
Okay.
And the seats or the bikes are first come, first serve, not pre-booked. And I have the regulars who've been there for a number of weeks, some months, number of years.
So what happens there?
you have the regulars who always want to be on their bike. They get there early for their bike. And if someone is sitting on their bike, in inverted commas, because they've structured this comfort zone
within
such a small thing as a bike in a spinning class that they come to once a week, they get so frustrated and upset because that's my bike. You know, it's just human conditioning because if there's that knowing potentially for them, we may not know, there won't be fear, but the unknown brings a lot of fear to people. But it's lovely for people to live in the unknown. I need to be more of that because I'm very much a planner in my brain. And in planning is in knowing. It's about letting go of the plan to be in the unknown.
Now that I do a lot of business and a lot of strategic writing on concepts and growing brands, and I've learned that it's better not to know in that world, because people that build the most life-changing things are the people that didn't know. And those who know, they work for us.
Drop that mic.
Those who know, they work for us.
Let's go.
Because you must be willing not to know, to be stupid, to sound stupid. You know, I'm always willing to sound stupid. Like when you ask me something, I'm like, I don't know. I've never heard that word. Zoe will tell you because I spent a lot of time. You've never heard? I'm like, no, I've never heard that word before. I don't know it. What does it mean? Explain it to me. And I'm like, oh. And you're being sarcastic. I'm like, no, I don't know it. You know, so I'm like that. I'm always learning a new skill. I'm always learning new things. I'm also learning the things that people come naturally to them. And I'm always like, I don't know that. How do we navigate it? So there's always like, I'm a student.
Are there any hats in your world that we have not discussed that you'd like to dive it more into?
I believe the work, the most of the work that I do is more. For the longest time, I thought I was a musician, but not anymore. I think I've transcended from being a musician. I think I'm more of a connector. Music is a medium. Because all the other heads, same thing. I'm connecting ideas. I'm connecting concepts. If I'm producing a show with the agency, I run the agency that manages artists and curates live music events. The first time you actually met me is the listening session for Zoe, but I don't think you would have known me at that time.
I remember, I think you were on the stage helping with the wires. Yes. Yes.
I organized all of that.
Yes.
The launch, I don't know if you came to the launch at Gold Reef City.
No.
Yeah, there was a whole like proper launch out on the 1,000 something sold out show. I organized concerts. So I believe that stopping playing music for about half a decade made me see more of what I am in the space. Because now the dying of the thing you always thought it was the main thing, it makes you realize that no, it's part of a bigger thing. So I think instead of saying I wear a lot of hats,
okay,
for me, I would say I'm more like a connector,
okay,
in the music world. Even when it comes to like the album zines, you know, like, I was thinking I would ask you to tell me what genre the music is. Cause for me, I don't know what it is, but I know it connects. Mm-hmm. If I was to ask you now, what genre is that music I was playing?
I can't put a label to it, but it was very much a feeling that was resonating in my body of emotions and energy.
So you see, so for me, that's the thing around. What sometimes we do the words. There's a new friend I met from the US, and I was talking to them. I was talking about, because they obviously speak English only, and I was telling them, because we don't come from the same world, Adrian. So, and there's that culturally, and also there's English, and you come from a space of wanting to fight for something. Fighting for something. So when I speak, the way I say things and the way you hear them are two different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was saying that sometimes I think I need to think more about the things I want to say in a way that by the time it gets to you, my energy is correct for you to not listen to the words more than listen to how I'm expressing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I don't know what you mean. Cause you're very articulate. The way you speak, I'm like, no, it's not about how articulate I am. It's more about how you receive the information, because the language is secondary.
Yes. So this is very interesting. So it's called NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. So that's the way people process information. So every person processes or receives information differently. And unfortunately, a lot of the world are assuming that everyone is hearing, seeing, and receiving information the same as them. Yeah. So then they project. And part of the aspects, so one of the elements is of this NLP is dictionary of definitions. So my definition of the way I see the color blue will be different to the way you see the color blue. Mm. But a lot of projection is happening because everyone's assuming that you see the color blue the same as them without diving into that. So oftentimes I will be listening to a conversation and a word will pop up, basic word like control or low self-esteem. And I'll pause a person and I'll say to him, okay, what is your definition of that word?
Oh, just to make sure that you understand what
on the same page, yes, because I know my definition.
Yes.
And there might be a disconnect in what my understanding and the processing of the information of what their perception of the definition of it, that is.
I hear you.
For me, without projecting, it might be a situation of you saying, okay, this is my definition of this word. What is yours? So we can get to not necessarily the same page, but get to a bridge of gap of understanding.
No, I hear you. And yeah, I'm happy because now you're explaining things I didn't even know about. For me, it's like communication.
Yeah.
Someone who's really interested in connecting. Even social issues, most of them, the reason why there's so much pull and push and pull is because we don't take time to really talk about the unspoken misunderstandings.
Yeah. And I'd say that 9 times out of 10, breakdown of communication or misunderstandings happen because of this concept and not diving. So let's play a game. What is your definition of the word control? If you hear that word, how would you describe it? Not the dictionary definition, your definition.
So for me, like when you say control, the word that came into mind, I don't know how it fits in, guidance, depending on what.
Okay.
How much leeway it's given, whatever it is. So if you're controlling a car, if you are a driver, you're the one in control of the car. But if you're a passenger, I can't say you're in control. So you already, you see, on the perspective I'm taking it from. So my dad is very controlling. Your dad. You know, my husband is very controlling. Okay, what do you mean your husband is controlling or my boyfriend is controlling?
Yeah.
No, they want certain things done a certain way. But why? Have you asked them why?
Mm.
You know, so there's like all these
nuances.
And lately I've been dealing with a lot of nuances on things. And most of the time I'm like, I don't get it. I disagree with you, but your way should be your way. And it's fine.
Exactly.
And what I've learned is that other people are not comfortable with that. It's fine also. Because they feel like you are rejecting because you are not agreeing and you are fine with it. Why are you fine? Because we need to agree. And for me, I'm learning that part of control is when your own control. You see now, when I talk about my self-control now. Did you see how I got to the self-control part?
Yeah, yeah.
Where I'm like, my self-control tells me, even if I disagree with you, I can tell you I disagree with you, but it's okay.
Yeah.
For you to
have that.
Have that.
Exactly.
That's your thing.
My definition of control is that if you take a big camera right now and you took sort of a x-ray type photograph, everything is an energy field, right? Mm. My definition of control is a negative one because control for me is trying to hold on to something that you cannot see. And most people, when they say they've got things under control, life happens and then they lose the plot because they're trying to control an energy field which they cannot see. So my definition and perception of control is a negative one because it's keeping things so structured and in place and controlled that there's no room for breath. That's my definition of control.
I see where you're looking at it. Because of the way you process things.
Yeah.
We process them differently.
Because for me,
my team will tell you that sometimes they'll ask me a question I want to answer. Say, I don't know. But you know, I'm like, no, I don't know. because I'm trying to not answer things because of their knowing, because my intuition is telling me something else. And when I know, I'll tell you. And when I tell them, they're like, how do you get to that? I'm like, no, I just needed to listen, because the reason why I can't answer you now is because I actually don't know. And it's okay. So part of control is letting go. So when you say control is when you are not, there's no space on from your, the way you look at it. For me, control is when you know that you could get out of control.
Interesting. This discussion.
I don't want to go into philosophy. Yeah. But it's part of control is knowing that you are not in control.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Banda, what else is happening for the next period? We've got the album release. So what's happening?
I'm very excited to be part of the South African music world. I'm very excited for these times where our music is going to the globe. I'm very excited to see music being part of mainstream again. I've been talking about it for some time. Live shows are going to make the most impact right now. And the next 5 years is going to be the biggest thing. Records will be selling a lot. Yeah, so I'm very excited. And I'm also very excited to tell the world. I think I took a long time to center myself here, but I think it's time for me to go all over Africa, the US, Asia, Japan. That's my world right now. I'm also looking forward to performing the music. In fact, learning it first, but performing it and just feeling how people are really receiving it, and being honest with the journey of the unknown, you know, and I'm looking for other seekers that are looking with me as we open the vault together, where we can find some treasures, some pain, some happiness in this music that I've created, where I want people to put their pains there and exchange it for happiness, you know, peace. Heal all the wounds that I also have personally. That's where I'm going. Yeah, and have some fun. At the same time, work hard, make money, have some fun, peace of mind, travel the world. Should people want to know more, then if they get me on social media, they'll see more. I don't want to say much because most of it is unknown, so I can't control it. But if you follow what I'm all about, you'll see that there's so many pockets of connecting a lot of things. Mm. You yourself, what are you up to? No, because you know why I'm asking.
Tell me.
Because I feel like you contribute so much to other people. Sometimes people need to know what you are doing. Because for instance, this podcast is amazing and communication is amazing.
I do.
And sometimes when you interview people, you forget yourself. And I'm putting you in a spot. That's why you're like, hey, don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So pushing with interviews, reaching out. I've got my lists of artists and reaching out to that we're nailing down, and just carry on pumping celebs front and allowing it and letting it be the entertainment platform of South Africa, Africa and the world.
I like that.
That's the intention.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's really, really beautiful. I'm very excited for what it's becoming. And I'm really happy to be here. It's one of those things that you do and you feel fulfilled, you know, your spirit, and to amplify your voice. And I was happy when you told me that, it's everywhere in the world. It's not fixed to color, sex, region, continent, you know. Religion, you know, because those things are separators, and I'm a connector.
So yeah.
I'm very happy about that.
So Banda, the podcast is listened to throughout the world.
Okay.
As a final message, what would you like to say?
So it's okay to listen to all the parts of you, and it's okay to not know. And it's okay to look for things that you don't know you needed. Keep on going and take time to forgive yourself.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.